The Act of Attainder was a kind of a medieval holdover from the Wars of the Roses, English Civil Wars in the later 15th century, and all it basically did was declare a man, independent of trial, independent of what he said, to be guilty of treason and would allow you to kill him. And this move to kill Strafford, and I should stress that Parliament was pushed to it because they had hoped, in a sense, to get rid of him the easier way through impeachment, and when that didn't work, their fear led them to try and get rid of him through an Act of Attainder, really changed the tone of politics in the Long Parliament, and it really heightened fear and mistrust on both sides. And Charles now only fueled this mistrust by trying to free Strafford from prison by force. Unfortunately, like almost all early modern conspiracies, it seems, no one could keep the secret, and the army plot, as it was called, was actually broken to the public on the 3rd of May 1641, and it was fairly clearly a turning point. Many of Charles's former supporters in the House of Lords were alienated by the news that the king was seeking to resort to force to resolve his problems, and even many of the people who would still have supported Charles were intimidated away from sitting in Parliament by angry mobs of Londoners who were now crowding into the streets. Indeed, there were huge demonstrations taking outside the palace, all of them calling for Strafford's head, and Charles lost his nerve. On the 10th of May, shaken by all of these events, he gave in. And 2 days later, that is to say, he gave up Strafford, he let him go, he withdrew his protection, and Strafford lost his head on the 12th of May, 1641. Indeed, so panicked was Charles at this point that he was hustled into signing a bill which declared that henceforth Parliament could not be dissolved without its own consent, an unprecedented constitutional change, and Parliament then went on to abolish all of the king's powers of prerogative taxation altogether. What happened at this point is really revealing of early modern politics. That is to say, the demand for change now began to spill over from one sphere into another. It moved from the secular sphere, where people worried about prerogative taxation and the king's powers and his lieutenants, into the ecclesiastical sphere. And what is interesting about this expansion of the grounds of conflict is that it was this expansion which would ultimately break the consensus in Parliament and ultimately, ironically it seems to me, make possible the Civil War. Because in 1640, Charles had almost no allies. He had alienated almost everybody. But by 1642, what had happened was that he had regained enough support now to finally fight, and indeed almost to win, the Civil War. What had happened? In May of 1641, religious radicals in the English Parliament presented the so-called Root and Branch Bill, which now proposed the complete abolition of episcopacy, the abolition of the bishops, and in its place to have the nomination of ministers by their own congregations, a form of religious organization often called independents, independent congregations in the early modern context. This proposal aroused considerable opposition in Parliament, especially in the House of Lords, which tended to be somewhat more conservative. Most MPs, it has to be said, were opposed to Laud's version of English church government. They didn't want these overmighty ecclesiastical princes telling people what to do, punishing them with courts if they didn't listen, and instituting what looked like a kind of crypto-Catholicism. But objecting to a Laudian interpretation of episcopacy was rather different from wanting to abolish episcopacy altogether. And the fears of social and political conservatives are really well expressed by a tract published by Sir Thomas Ashton in 1641 and called The Remonstrance Against Presbytery, in which he warns that freedom of conscience in persons is not enough, but they must have their purses and estates free too. Nay, they go higher, even to the denial of the right to property in our estates. In other words, what is happening is that as the demands for change expand and move from the high politics of the crown to ecclesiastical government itself, social conservatives get scared. They worry that all restraint on society is going to fall away, and this is going to push them back over to the king. Indeed, these controversial encroachments, and I think it's worth stressing how controversial they were, on the executive power of the monarchy, on the order of the church, and indeed on the order of society itself, might actually have divided the Parliament so much that could have ended the crisis altogether. In particular, this is true because in 1641, Charles actually managed to make peace with the Covenanters. So there's a period in 1641 when Charles has made peace with the Covenanters, and Parliament itself is now divided over the worry about what kind of social anarchy might emerge from the situation, and support is swinging back to the king. But the pendulum would only swing so far. And just as the Scots had saved Charles's critics, in a sense, in the years 1638 to 1640, the Irish would save Charles's critics in 1641. In October of 1641, the Gaelic Catholic Irish rose up against their Protestant colonial overlords in Ulster, and they were soon joined all over Ireland by many of the Catholic Old English, as we've called them.